They were all staring at the pool, and as they watched, slime bubbled up and popped, splattering sludge, burping after its meal.
I'm sorry, but that's just... no. You want people to drown themselves in muck? That's nuts.
I don't want anyone to do anything. You're the ones who came to me. Only the dead can enter. What difference does it make how you die?
Muriel said this so calmly that it made Moya furious. It was as if Muriel had said, "What's the problem, honey? Can't make a cake without cracking a few eggs, right?"
No! See? No!
Moya was shaking her head again. She hadn't really stopped shaking it since the duck went down. She wore an all-encompassing frown, as if every square inch of her face was thrown into the effort.
Sorry about wasting your duck and all, but there's no way. There's just no way.
It does look quite unpleasant.
Gifford grimaced in a style all his own.
I didn't think any of you would actually go through with this. Though I'll admit, you had me worried for a while.
Yeah. Well, oh!
Moya was still backing away. She bumped into Bryn, who was standing behind her, and jumped at the contact.
Tressa, you couldn't have been thinking it'd be like this, could you?
Tressa just stared at the pool.
There's no sense standing here.
We're going to go back?
Gifford's question sounded more hopeful than disappointed.
I suppose we
Malcolm wouldn't send us here if it wasn't necessary.
Malcolm can fill a pit for all I care.
To be fair, how could he tell anyone about this?
He's right. You really have to see it.
That's why I brought the duck. Well, that and the feathers.
We have to trust him.
Tressa took a step forward.
Tressa!
It's the same as it was with Wraith, only worse.
Moya realized with growing concern that she wasn't talking to any of them. This was her own personal debate.
He knew. Tressa, what are you doing?
To everyone's relief, the woman turned around, but the respite was short-lived when they saw the look in her eyes. She bent down and took items from the basket. When she stood, determination took hold of Tressa just as tightly as she gripped the feather in one hand and a stone in the other.
He did this for me. Don't you see? To everyone else I no longer existed, but not to Malcolm. He gave me this chance. Now it's up to me to take it. He said it wouldn't be easy. Said it would be harder than even what Wraith had suffered. Don't you see? This is my chance. My one way out. If I don't take it, what am I? What good is living the way I do? I might as well be dead.
She took a backward step closer to the pool.
Tressa, don't you dare.
I'm sorry I lied to you, Moya. To all of you. That's why he picked me. When you want to build a wall, it's best to ask a mason. And when you need to deceive good people, you ask me. I'll wait a little while, in case any of you change your mind. Then if you don't come, I'll go for Suri by myself. You'll understand if you don't come along. You all have lives. It's just me that doesn't.
Tressa!
Moya lunged forward, but Tressa threw herself into the pool. Given the force of her fall, and because she weighed more than the duck, Tressa was immediately swallowed up to her waist.
Tressa!
Moya turned to the onlookers, her eyes frantic.
Give me rope! Give me rope!
There was none to give. Moya searched the trees. Jumping up, she tore at vines, ripping them free. Tesh and Tekchen helped her, and together they threw one end to Tressa. By then, the woman had sunk down to her shoulders.
Grab the vine!
Tressa shook her head. She held her mouth stiff, eyes staring straight out, breathing rapidly through her nose. She was terrified. Bryn fell to her knees.
Tressa! Oh, blessed grandmother! Tressa!
As the dark surface of the pool inched up her neck, a smile shattered the stone hardness of Tressa's face.
Malcolm is a god.
She gasped one last time for air. Then, as they all watched, just as with the duck, Tressa was swallowed up.
Tressa, you stupid bitch!
Moya was on her hands and knees, sobbing at the edge of the pool, vines still gripped in her fingers.
Why did you do that? Why?
She wasn't the only one crying. Bryn, Roan, and Gifford were in tears as well. Maybe they all were. Moya couldn't tell. She couldn't see anything clearly. She was face down, pounding the grass with both fists, holding the sod responsible for everything. When that didn't help, she began ripping it up by the handfuls.
Tressa! Why did you do that?
No one said anything for a long moment. as their inharmonious, mournful hitch of tears replaced the natural sounds of the pond. But maybe, Moya thought, having not remembered hearing a cricket or frog since arriving on the island, in this place, perhaps sorrow is the indigenous song of night. Moya wiped her face with the edge of her cloak. That's when she heard Gifford.
Won?
Roan took a step toward the pool.
Roan, what are you doing?
I can't let Tressa go alone.
She had tears running down her cheeks. The tone in her voice made everyone's head snap up. Gifford took two stones and two feathers from Muriel's basket and moved to Roan's side.
I'll go with you.
Roan shook her head.
No, you don't believe in Malcolm. I can see it in your face. You're worried, scared, terrified. You just can't see any of those words.
I don't need to believe in him. I believe in you, Juan. And Tressa is my friend.
Roan, Gifford, Tressa is dead. You can't do anything more for her.
She used to call you the freak, Gifford. Remember that?
I know, but it was different when she said it. Tressa knew she was a freak, too.
He turned to face Roan, who looked up at him with glassy eyes, her lips trembling.
I'd die without you. I wasn't alive until we touched. When you trusted me. Won't. I can't live without it now. I won't. I can't. If you leave me, I'll die. Might as well go together.
Roan, Gifford, no.
Maybe what Tressa said about Malcolm is true. If not...
He looked at Roan with tears slipping down his cheeks.
I've got no regrets. Well, just one. I haven't kissed you.
With tear-filled eyes, Roan pushed up on her toes. She put a hand to either side of his face and pulled Gifford to her, kissing him for the first time. When she let him go, Gifford smiled.
Oh, okay then. No regrets at all now.
I love you, Gifford.
I love you too, Juan. I always have, and I always will.
They looked at the pool.
Okay.
Gifford gave a firm nod and held out the stones and feathers.
Together then.
Roan took one of each.
Don't. Please don't.
The rest of them watched in mute disbelief as Roan and Gifford took each other's hands and waded into the pool. Slowly, they began to sink, embracing once more.
Rain, tell Frost and Flood I said goodbye.
The slime surged up to their shoulders. And then it reached up to their chins. Gifford and Roan kissed once more, then slipped below the surface. Moya was still on her hands and knees, but her forehead was in the dirt as she struggled to breathe. She looked up and caught sight of Muriel, still standing next to the basket.
Sorry. I'm sorry, okay, but I'm really, really unhappy right now.
Muriel said nothing. She had one hand up to her lips, and Moya was surprised to see tears on her cheeks, too. Crying, it appeared, was contagious, and this was one disease the Tetlin Witch wasn't immune to.
Tet!
Moya slapped the ground with both hands, then got up and began looking around.
What are you searching for, Moya?
As if you don't know.
Muriel reached into her basket, plucked out a stone, and handed it to her. Moya snatched the stone away, then looked at Tekchen, finding it hard to believe what she was about to say, knowing he would find it even harder to hear.
Look, Tekchen, you're gonna live another couple thousand years or so. And I would have died in a measly 30, give or take, and that's if I was lucky. Wouldn't even be worth the effort, really. If you stick around, you'd have to watch me get old. And then you'd have to watch me die anyway. You must have thought about that.
I have.
There was no shock, no concern in his voice. The Galantian didn't even look sad. Everyone else was crying, even Tesh and Rain. But Tekchen was dry as a desert and not the least bit worried. His two-word reply was just as flippant as anything he ever said.
Okay, then.
It hurt her to see Tekchen take it so easily. She'd wanted him to take it well, but there was such a thing as being too brave.
So, you're all set, then, with this?
I'm going with you.
Oh, no. No, you are not. That would be so ridiculously stupid. I don't even know how to count all the ways that would be so colossally dumb. Roan could, but since she's dead, there's no one alive that can. It would be a waste. A waste of a very long life. And you have to take the others back.
I'm going with you.
Moya recognized that ridiculous Galantian bravado.
No, you're not. Don't you hear me? You're just not. You have whole centuries left, dozens of lifetimes ahead of you. You don't need to do this.
But I am doing it. And you will need me when you get to Estramnodon. No one else speaks Frey.
No.
Moya came to him and took his face in her hands.
I can't mean that much to you. I can't. I'm just a rune. A lousy, loud-mouthed rune. Most of my own people don't like me. Especially the soldiers. They hate that a woman is shield to the Koenig. Isn't that right, Tesh?
I don't hate you. I've always respected and admired you.
What the tuff do you know, you culling bastard? Don't listen to him.
Moya wiped her eyes with muddy hands, making a mess.
I'm nothing. My own mother didn't love me. And you, you'll live for centuries. You won't even remember my name. I'll be just a tiny fraction of a moment you'll forget. There'll be other runes. Frey, maybe even a dwarf. Dear ladies are actually quite attractive. Did you know that? Of course you do. You must have had hundreds of conquests before me, and you'll have thousands more.
Nope.
He encircled her with his arms.
You were my first, and I'm thinking my only.
What?
Moya's brows came up sharply. She shook her head.
No, that's not possible. You're lying. There's no way you were a virgin when we met.
Not that. You're my first love.
Moya continued to stare. She was confused. This wasn't making any sense. She'd lived with this Frey for 5 years, and he'd never even said that word. She concluded long ago that it was one of the runic words he'd never learned. Tekchen was an adventurer, a risk-taker, erratic, and easily distracted. She was just a plaything to him, something he would eventually become bored with. She wasn't even quite sure why that hadn't happened yet.
We Frey don't stay with one person our whole lives. Maybe because with so much time it gets too boring. I don't know. But we don't feel that deeply for each other. We're taught not to. People go insane that way. Too much loss over the centuries. But you're not Frey. So you didn't know that people aren't supposed to love each other with such passion. And you just threw yourself out there. How could I resist falling in love with that? And you're right. I would have to watch you die. You think that would be bad for someone like Gifford or Roan? How'd you like to be me? Having to live with that pain for centuries. I wouldn't forget you. Not ever. And all that heartache for all those years would be nothing when compared to even the short time we had together.
She hugged and kissed him, then let go. Moya took a deep breath, then turned and looked sheepishly toward Bryn. As they hugged, she whispered in the Keeper's ear.
I'm sorry. Go back. We'll either come out or not. Either way, the three of you should go back and let Seth know what happened.
Moya gave the crying young woman a kiss on the forehead and looked at Tesh.
You take care of her. If I find out you didn't, I will so haunt your arse.
She returned to Tekchen, who waited at the edge of the pool. They checked to make sure they had their stones and feathers. She wagged her finger at Muriel.
On the outside chance this works, how do we use this?
It represents the idea of lightness. It should help you rise back up. Maybe.
Maybe.
Well, it's not like I've done this before. Or anyone else, for that matter. But ideas matter in Pyre. Your will in believing is everything.
Okay. And any pointers on how to navigate through Pyre?
Never been, so I don't know. But if Turin wants this, I can't imagine he'll abandon you. I suspect you'll receive help.
In the afterlife?
When it comes to Turin, almost anything is possible. Almost.
Malcolm?
Our little Malcolm, who has trouble putting on his boots, can arrange help for us in Pyre.
If he wants to, yes.
This is so insane.
Never a dull moment with you.
We're gonna kiss as we drown like Gifford and Roan, right? Because that looked pretty nice.
Tekchen scooped her up and carried her to the edge, where he paused.
Do it.
In they went.
She was alone, surrounded by enemies, facing torture and death. But she was still Suri, which to the Frey must have been as mystifying as planting crops in winter and seeing them sprout. The Book of Bryn.
Suri opened her eyes just as the rear door to her cage opened. Sun, air, and the promise of liberty flooded in. Fear, desperation, and nausea drained away. The gates of paradise had swung wide. Her deliverance was at hand. Outside, half a dozen soldiers brandished spears, each pointed at her. Stern faces, hateful and cruel, let Suri know they would kill her if she didn't do what they wanted. After her time in the box, what Suri wanted was to kiss them. She didn't act on the impulse. They probably wouldn't have understood. The anxiety she'd harbored at facing the fray in their home city had burned to ash within that crucible of a wagon. She emerged into a dappled patch of sunlight.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Those disagreeable faces aiming spears wavered with confusion, but weren't daunted. They didn't try to speak to her. Rough jabs ordered Suri to turn and move across the square toward the more elaborate of the two big buildings. Other soldiers kept the crowd at bay.
Stay back.
For our own safety,
rooms
please keep your distance.
Rooms are and can be dangerous.
Please stay back and keep the way to the palace clear.
Palace?
She still couldn't use the art, but free of the cage, Suri could think again.
They're taking me to see the Fane.
Suri's joy was short-lived as she realized what that meant. So much of the last few days had felt like a fever-induced haze, as if she had been swimming underwater, popping up at intervals to breathe and gain peeks at the world. Huge, beautiful trees of a kind she'd never seen. Quaint villages built into the sides of hills. Delicate homes with high roofs and tall windows. And bright colored clothes. Suri remembered it all as a jumble of images, sights, and sounds. The veil was now cast back, the fever broken. She observed this new world clearly for the first time. The spears urged her across paving stones that formed a diamond-shaped plaza, where exquisite statues of stone and elaborately carved fountains depicted flora and fauna. Awnings shaded tables that surrounded the square. Some of them were laden with fruits and vegetables. Others held loaves of bread, baskets, needlework, pottery, and sculpture. One stand displayed a painting, a portrait of a vicious monster in a cage. A slobbering animal with wild eyes and bared teeth gripped the bars.
That's how they see me. That's how I was. A fine ambassador I've made. But then they haven't been the best of hosts.
As Suri climbed the stairs up the hill to the palace, she glanced back over the heads of her escorts and could see the whole of Estramnadon below. Not so big as she imagined, the Frey capital was a masterful work of art. Meticulously kept homes and gardens clustered around the square, surrounded by the opposing hills that acted as pedestals for the two great buildings. The domed one across the way shone as a shaft of sunlight pierced the canopy. The palace before her, an edifice of towers that mimicked the soaring plume of trees, remained in shadow. She looked back at the wagon in the plaza and heard Arion's words from the past.
You're special, Suri. I can feel it the same way I sense the seasons. It's not merely that you can use the art, it's you yourself. You need to prove to the Fane that runes are just as wonderful, as important, as deserving of life as the Frey. If you can do that, they will see their mistake and change their minds. But this can only happen if you accept who you are. Only then can you change the world. You just have to spread your wings and decide it's time to fly.
Suri felt the collar tight on her neck.
How could I do that when they took away my wings?
There were no chairs in the throne room besides the giant one the Fane sat on, which wasn't really a chair, but rather the conveniently formed roots of several twisted trees. Not that Suri would have sat in one. She found chairs odd things, not unlike shoes and walls. Even after years spent in Dal Ren and Alan Rist, Suri had somehow successfully remained civilized.
Nice room, as far as rooms go.
The ceiling was so high she couldn't see it, and the space felt more like a forest glen preserved inside a cave. The place was dark except for a shaft of light that streamed in from an unseen point and struck the throne where the Fane sat. The Frey ruler leaned back into one side, with an elbow propped on the chair's arm and his fingers thoughtfully rubbing his lower lip. He appeared reserved, calm, even bored, but his eyes betrayed a hunger. The soldiers pushed Suri to the center of the room, then retreated, leaving her and the Fane alone. The two watched each other in silence. Suri had never experienced such quiet. No wind or songs of birds, no shuffling feet or murmuring voices. The eyes of the world were on her, waiting to see what would happen.
Was this what you expected, Arian? Is this where you imagined I would stand? Is this what you wanted me to do? This must finally be that moment.
I'm told you were trained to speak our language.
Yes.
That's good, because now you will tell me the secret of how to create dragons.
Why would I do that?
The Fane scowled at her.
Don't you dare speak to me that way!
His voice, amplified by the art, shook the chamber.
Higher or lower?
What?
How would you prefer that I talk? Higher or lower? Louder, perhaps? I can't do a nifty sound weave like you did because of this collar, but I can yell if you're hard of hearing. Or is it that you'd like me to speak in runic? Do you know how to do that?
She shook her head as he stared at her, dumbfounded.
I'm pretty sure it would be best if we stick to Frey. Now, I am here as a representative of Kinig Persephone, sent to work out details for a peace between our...
Silence!
Suri wasn't about to be silent. She had waited and suffered enough. This was the person responsible, the one she'd come to speak to, and she had a great deal to say.
Our two peoples, in the hope of ending this war. So far, I have been assaulted, stripped of my Asica, imprisoned in a cage...
I said silence!
...deprived of food and drink, and humiliated in every village along the way. So before we begin negotiations, I expect an apology.
You expect... You expect?
The Fane's eyes bulged, his face flushed, and his hands gripped the arms of his throne.
How dare you? Tell me the secret, or I will have you killed this very minute!
Don't you mean, tell you the secret and then you will kill me? That's the truth, isn't it?
The Fane said nothing, but his eyes screamed at her.
So let me think.
She looked up at the branches overhead and tapped her finger to her lips in false contemplation.
I can give you exactly what you want and then be murdered, or I can insist we work out a plan by which our two cultures can learn to live together in peace, which would absolutely require me staying alive. Let me see.
I am the Fane of the Frey!
He stood up, his golden Asica shimmering in the shaft of light.
I was appointed ruler of the world by the Lord God Pharaoh. You will kneel and do as instructed!
Okay. I've decided.
Suri nodded with a pleasant smile.
No, I won't be telling you anything about dragons, and I'm fine with standing. Thank you.
The Fane formed a weave with his hands. Suri read it as pain, only she didn't feel any. She should have. The way he shaped it, she should have been screaming in excruciating agony. As it was, nothing at all happened.
It's the collar. Some idiot named Jared put it on me. If you'd like to take it off, you can try again.
She smiled wickedly.
Maybe you can have your son join us.
Vasek!
The door to the room burst open. A slight female with the eyes of a hawk was the first to enter. She was followed by a giant brute and a handful of soldiers. They looked at Suri, then at the Fane, confusion on their faces. The last to enter was a Frey wearing a gray cloak with his hood up.
Vasek! This room! This... Vasek, take this thing from my sight. I'd give it to Sign, but the collar is a problem. So you'll get the honors. Take it. Hurt it. Do whatever you have to until it is willing to tell me what I need to know. Do you understand?
Yes, my Fane.
Vasek gestured to the soldiers who grabbed Suri by the arms.
I've heard that this rune doesn't like small enclosed spaces. Take her to the hole. The smallest one. Seal the creature in. No window, no light, no sound. If she doesn't like to be locked up, let's see how much she enjoys an early grave. Bury her.
I honestly never thought it would end this way. I am guessing those of you reading this did not either. The Book of Brynn.
Brynn watched Moya and Tekchen disappear beneath the muck.
This can't be happening. How did it all go so wrong so fast?
Brynn's mind fought to sort out the events, to make sense of the nonsensical.
Tekchen died for Moya. Moya died for Roan and Gifford. Gifford died for Roan, and Roan died for Tressa. But what did Tressa die for? Tressa never did anything for anyone but herself. Why did Tressa go?
As Brynn struggled to work out the problem, Rain took a stone and a feather. No one said a word to him, and true to his quiet nature, he said nothing either. Rain offered only a firm, resolved nod before entering the pool, as if it were a tub and he seeking a bath. Like the others, he was swallowed up in seconds, leaving only Tesh, Bryn, and Muriel.
No sense! None of this makes any sense! Why would she...
Then the answer came to her.
Malcolm!
Everyone always said that the Frey were gods, but we know they aren't. I don't think the same can be said about Malcolm.
But Malcolm couldn't really be...
Her eyes shifted from the pool to Muriel, the green and gray-eyed woman who silently stood there as if waiting for Bryn to make up her mind.
Muriel.
The name echoed in her mind. It was familiar, of course. Not that Bryn had ever known another Muriel, but she'd once read it on... And that's when the circle closed and the last piece of the puzzle fell into place. She realized who Muriel was.
Is it okay if we stay in your hut tonight?
His voice was measured and low, as if to say, this is done, it's over. It was a soldier's detached eulogy. Death happened often in this world. Time to move on, his eyes said. Keep moving. That was Tesh's answer to death. He was so accepting of it, so sober. Bryn didn't want to use the word cold, even though it fit.
I think it'd be best if we waited until morning before
Tesh,
we...
Tesh, I'm not leaving.
There's no reason to wait here. Bryn, there...
He chose not to finish, maybe for her sake, or perhaps for his. She wasn't sure which would be better. It didn't matter.
Not waiting here, either.
Tesh read the tone of her voice, which was solid and steady.
Well, that doesn't make... No!
Bryn moved to Muriel and took a stone from the basket.
Oh, no, you're not!
Tesh's tone left no room for argument. He sounded like her father.
You can forget that right now. We're going back. We'll spend the night in Muriel's house and be off at first light.
Bryn took a feather as well.
Bryn, do you hear me? Are you listening?
She stepped toward the pool. With the speed and agility Bryn had only seen him demonstrate in combat, Tesh rushed forward and caught her by the wrist.
I'm not kidding, Bryn. I won't let you. You're not going to throw your life away like they did. I'll carry you all the way back if it comes to that.
His face was stern, commanding. Bryn stayed back at the full extent of her arm, staring at him as his fingers tightened. Tesh had grown in the years she'd known him, in both size and strength. What had started as a nickname had become a title. His entire warband had adopted the name Tekalors. His exploits and those of his team in the Harwood had already become legend. Tesh would have no trouble enforcing his threat, but this was too important to give in. She loved him, but that wasn't enough. He had to love her, too, and love had to mean more than just having her.
You do that, and it will be over between us. I'll never speak to you again. I swear it, Tesh, on my life. I promise you that.
She meant every word, and it hurt to say them, to hear them out loud. They sounded like a betrayal, even to herself, as if she were holding a knife to the throat of her own child. The pain must have shown on her face, because at that moment, Tesh's stony expression cracked in confusion.
Why?
Because it's what Malcolm wants me to do.
What? Are you insane?
You don't understand, Tesh.
She was still shaking her head, more in frustration now. She had no idea how to explain. Bryn wanted him to understand, needed him to, but knew he couldn't. No words were capable of saying what she felt, what she knew, and how she knew it. To him, to the cold soldier he had become, all of it would sound impossible.
Don't understand what?
That Malcolm is a god.
Tesh rolled his eyes.
Bryn, Malcolm is just Wraith's friend. He was a slave to the Frey, a slave. If he's a god, how'd that happen, huh? Tell me that.
I don't know. I can't explain it, but I believe.
She pointed at Muriel with her free hand.
Tesh, her name is Muriel. Muriel, Tesh.
He stared back at her with blank eyes.
Don't you remember what I told you in Alon Rist? What I explained about the gods? It was on the Agave tablets. We talked about it the day of our first kiss, remember? Feral, Drome, Mari, and Muriel are the four gods born from the same father. She's that, Muriel. And if Malcolm really is her father, he'd be a god too.
Muriel looked at her curiously, but said nothing.
You aren't thinking clearly. Bryn, do you hear yourself?
I do. The question is, do you hear me? Tressa was right. Malcolm wanted me to come. He arranged it so I would be here, but I haven't done anything, not yet. Why would Malcolm need me to be included if I have no purpose?
Bryn looked at the pool.
My book, Tesh. That's why I'm here. The Book of Bryn. Malcolm and I talked about it before he left.
He told me it would be seen as an authority, like an eyewitness, and it might be the most important thing ever created by mankind. Don't you see?
No.
Malcolm doesn't say anything without a reason, without a purpose. I see that now. He wanted me to be an eyewitness and record what I saw in my book.
You can't write it if you're dead, Bryn.
She looked up at him.
You don't understand. I'm not supposed to record battles and the names of villages. The Book of Bryn will be more than that. It'll be the story of everything. But I can't write it unless I know the truth. And the truth is down there. Everything is. I have so many questions, and I need the answers. It's all part of a plan. Malcolm's plan. All of this is happening for a reason. I have to go. I need to learn the truth of the world, life, and yes, even death. It's all down there, Tesh. Malcolm wants the whole story told, and I'm the only one who can do it.
You don't know that.
I do. I do now.
How? How could you know?
I can't put it into words. Some things don't work that way. I feel it, Tesh. Like how Gifford talks about the art. It's as if Elan is speaking to me in this tiny voice, and I know it's true. Tesh, this is why I was born. This is my Gifford's ride.
The instant she said it, she felt the turn of her own words.
The answers are waiting. Who I really am and who I'm meant to be. The very reason I was created is down there. I don't have to go. Malcolm isn't making me do it. But by doing it, if I have the courage to go into that pool, then...
Then what? What?
Will you come with me?
Are you crazy? No!
It will be all right. I know it will.
You don't know anything.
Moya knew less than I do. She didn't believe in Malcolm, and yet she went. Tekchen followed her for no other reason than he loved her.
No, Bryn. That's not fair.
Why not? I know you love me. I felt it. You'd die for me, and that's all I'm asking you to do.
Oh, that's all?
Tesh looked at the pool with loathing, his lips curling into a sickened frown.
I do love you. I do, and I would die for you, but...
The grip on her wrist shifted slightly.
But what?
I can't.
Why?
Because!
It was a tone he'd never used with her. Bryn stared at him, trying to see what was hiding behind his eyes. Tesh wasn't a coward. No one alive could call him that. And she was certain he loved her. She couldn't be that mistaken, could she? Still, she saw it. Anger, fear, hatred all boiled within him.
Because you're not done.
Tesh said nothing. He refused to look at her.
It's true, isn't it? Meeks was telling the truth. You killed them. All of them. Sebek, Anwer, and Ares. That's the reason you can't follow me now. There's still one more left. One more Galantian. You can't die until you've killed him.
It's more than that. It's not just one more Galantian. It's the one who ordered it. It wasn't the Fane who destroyed Nadak and Daria. It was Nifrin, him and his band of Galantians. They killed my family and everyone I knew, everyone I loved. The worst part, he did it to use us. He started the war so he could rule the world. Pharaoh forbids Frey from killing Frey, so he slaughtered runes and said it was the Fane's doing. He needed us to swing the sword that he can't. 6 years of war, and his marriage to Persephone has made him respected among our people. They think he's selflessly fighting on their behalf. But he doesn't care about our kind. He only cares about getting what he wants. He's the root of so much death, and none of these people had to die. Not my parents, not Wraith, not your mother and father, none of them! I wanted him to know what it was like to see your whole clan wiped out.
Tesh shook his head.
But you know what? He doesn't care. The death of others doesn't matter to him. I think he'll care when he dies, though.
And that will fix everything, will it?
It'll fix a lot. It'll rid the world of a monster.
No, it won't. You'll only be trading one for another.
Tesh's eyes narrowed.
What are you talking about?
Revenge. That's what you want, Tesh. And revenge is contagious. Evil given for evil received.
It's not revenge, Bryn. It's justice.
Tesh looked to Muriel. But while the woman watched them closely, she gave no indication of taking sides.
And I'm sure that's what Nifrin calls it, too. That's why he wants to conquer his own people. This justice you're after. It's just one more terrible thing that someone is doing because something awful was done to them. You aren't fixing anything. You're breaking more things and calling it better. And you aren't freeing the world of a monster. You're taking its place.
That's not true.
Nifrin was a legend to his people, a great warrior, and the leader of an elite war band. How many Tekelors are there now?
It's not the same thing. We're nothing alike.
Are you sure? Or are you just refusing to see? Just like Nifrin, you'll do anything to achieve your goal.
No, I won't.
Tesh, you murdered your own friends. Anwir and Ares liked you. They taught you. They trusted you.
They were never my friends. They killed
And now, because I'm standing in your way, you're going to destroy me, too.
I would never hurt you.
Brynn looked down at his hand on her wrist.
You already are.
Tesh loosened his grip, but he didn't let go.
I don't want to lose you.
She offered him a sad smile.
Tesh, the only way you'll do that is by refusing to let me go.
That doesn't make sense.
His eyes were becoming glassy, tears welling up on his lower lids.
Sure it does. You just don't want it to.
Are you honestly asking me to prove my love for you by dying?
No, you're right. That wouldn't be fair. And honestly, it wouldn't prove anything.
She looked into his eyes.
I'm asking you to prove you love me by letting me die.
Through the connection of his hand on her wrist, she felt him stiffen, and she saw the impact.
If I let go, I'll never see you again.
Of course you will. If not in this life, then in the next.
That's not good enough.
Then come with me now.
No!
Then let me go.
No!
You can't have both, Tesh.
Why not?
He jerked her wrist again.
Because if you drag me away, if you do that, I'll know you just want me and that you don't love me. And knowing that will drive a wedge between us, and I'll hate you for it. But if that's what you want, we both know I can't stop you. So decide, Tesh. Either drag me away or let me go.
He said nothing.
Well, what will it be?
Brynn glanced at his sword.
Why don't you just hit me over the head with the pommel? That'll make it easier, won't it? Then you can just throw me over your shoulder like a stuffed bag, and you won't have to hear me scream. At least not till I wake up.
She glared at him.
Go on, do it. Do it, or let me go.
Tears spilled down his cheeks. Then, slowly, gently, his hand opened and released her wrist. His arm fell limply to his side. Brynn offered him a smile, but it did nothing to stem the flow of his tears.
Thank you.
She stepped forward and kissed him.
I love you, too.
She turned and walked to the edge of the pool. A thick skin of brown-green slime crusted the top. She half expected Tesh to grab her again, but he didn't. She turned to Muriel.
You'll be here when I come back, right?
I always am.
Good. Because I think I'm going to want to have a long talk with you.
I'll be sure to make cakes to go with the tea.
Brynn shuddered as she stood with her toes hanging over the pool's edge. She refused to look back at Tesh. If she did, she might not be able to go through with it. Even with her back to him, and after everything she'd just said, she still didn't know if she could go through with it. Brynn stood looking into the pool, and every muscle froze. Her heart beat so hard that her body rocked. She couldn't move her legs, couldn't bring herself to take that final step.
I'll see my mother and father. They're down there. They're waiting for me.
That one thought made the difference, and she lifted a foot and shifted her weight forward. She stepped into the goo and felt the cold clutch of the muck.
How can I do this? He really does love me, and he...
It was too late. The pool had her. There was a distinct sucking as she was drawn in, pulled to the center. She could feel it at her feet, a sensation as if she were entering into the throat of a toothless giant. The icy cold, colder than anything she'd ever felt, inched up her legs to her waist. It wasn't liquid, nor mud, but thick, freezing tar that seemed alive. She felt it gripping her, pulling her down as if with hands. She shook, cold and terrified, as inch by inch the muck crept up her chest, forcing the air from her lungs, making it harder to breathe. Looking up, she saw Muriel watching.
And there she sits upon her stool, beside the very brink, and watches as the fated fools down into darkness sink.
Like the hand of a corpse from a nightmare, the slime slid around her neck. Brynn struggled to stretch it higher, tilting her head back the same way the duck had in its desperate effort to draw in that last taste of air.
For you as well may find yourself a caught up in the mire, sinking, screaming uselessly and helpless till you tire. Then underwater and the muck a thrashing to and fro, all of you lost, forever gone, which cackling as you go.
When the slime covered her mouth, when it covered her head, Bryn couldn't help it. She began to scream. Legends of the First Empire, Book 4, Age of Legend, Part 2, is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2019 by Michael J. Sullivan, all rights reserved. Recorded with the permission of the author. Production copyright 2019, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Unauthorized download and/or duplication is prohibited. Narrated by Terence Aselford. Performed by Yasmin Toison as Moya, Nora Ashrati as Bryn, Lily Beacon as Muriel, Tracy Oliveira as Tressa, Jacob Ye as Tesh, Bradley Smith as Gifford, Kimberly Gilbert as Roan, and Amanda Forstrom as Suri. With Evan Casey, Chris Stinson, Eva Wilhelm, Tia Shearer, Robbie Gay, Chris Gennebach, Matthew Ward, Colleen Delaney, Paul Reisman, Lise Bruno, Richard Rowan, Christopher Walker, Jessica Lauren Ball, Zeke Alton, and Todd Schofield. Adapted for Graphic Audio and directed by Terence Aselford. Produced by Rick Rowan, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Casey Green. If you enjoyed Legends of the First Empire, Age of Legend, be sure to listen to Michael J. Sullivan's The Rhaera Revelations series, along with our whole catalog of exciting releases at www.graphicaudio.net. And remember to check out the free Graphic Audio Story Podcast, or GASP, available on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Pretty country.
None prettier.
Graphic Audio presents a new series from renowned sci-fi and fantasy author S.M. Sterling.
Damnedest thing.
Yep.
Odd news from back east. Some sort of electrical storm off Cape Cod. The weather people say they've never seen anything like it.
The New York Times best-selling post-apocalyptic series, The Emberverse.
Shut up! Keep quiet and let me work.
March 17th, 1998, 6:15 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and the change occurs. A worldwide event when all modern technology fails with no explanation.
People! There's a plane crashed right downtown and a fire burning out of control. And it looks like all the emergency services are out. They're going to need all the help they can get.
As combustion engines, electronics, and firearms all fail, only those with special skills and foresight will survive as humanity enters the new Dark Age.
Craziest damn thing I ever heard, Junie. But my equipment won't start. Not the car or the pickup, either. And the scattergun won't shoot worth shucks. There's gonna be hell to pay while this lasts, too.
How do you know it's not going to last forever?
What? It can't.
Former Marine Michael Hovell leads a band of survivors, turning frightened men and women into a deadly force for good in the wilds of Idaho and Western Oregon.
Stuff like this is probably happening all over the world. Most people aren't going to make it through the next year. I'd like to be one of the minorities still living come 1999. That's going to mean teamwork. Sitting around arguing at the wrong moment could get us all killed.
Lady Juniper and her newly formed Clan Mackenzie, what starts as a group of like-minded Wiccans and Renaissance reenactors, quickly turns into an organized farming collective, not afraid to fight for what's theirs.
People are getting really scared. You're the High Priestess. Give them some oomph, goddess on Earth.
We've got a lot of work to be done and not much time to do it in. Here's what I think. That it's a clan we'll have to be, as it was in the old days, if we're going to live at all.
Old threats from humanity's darkest past reemerge as plague, famine, and even cannibalism rear their ugly heads as scattered communities struggle to survive in the new world order.
It's all right. We've got plenty to eat. You can come for dinner.
We?
And who is the mysterious Lord Protector of Portland, exploiting the weak and killing those who will not bend a knee to his sadistic rule?
I think this generation's sharecroppers and hired hands will be the serfs and slaves of the next. By the end of this year, I intend to control the Willamette. It's the natural core for a kingdom. You bear killers would be well advised not to try to fight me for it.
Enter the Emberverse and prepare for a post-apocalyptic fantasy epic by S.M. Sterling in awe-inspiring graphic audio.
Thanks for listening to this graphic audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,000 titles and 100 series to choose from in high-quality download formats. If you'd like to listen to an entire series, you can now conveniently purchase a download series set from graphicaudio.net. At graphicaudio.net, you can also earn loyalty rewards points redeemable towards future online purchases. You can stream or get full downloads directly to your mobile phone or tablet with our newly updated Graphic Audio Access app, available on all Android and Apple devices. Listen to a movie in your mind, on the go, anytime, anywhere. For those of you who are new to Graphic Audio, check out our Graphic Audio Streams subscription service, where you can choose from four different genres. Each plan features two Graphic Audio titles per month to listen to through our Graphic Audio Access app. At the beginning of every month, the previous featured titles will be automatically removed and replaced by the new featured titles. It's an economical way to check out and sample titles from our various series in Graphic Audio, starting at only $4.99 per month. And be sure to listen to our newly reformatted Graphic Audio Story Podcast, GASP. Please subscribe, give us a 5-star review, and recommend us to your friends and family. You can get GASP in the free Graphic Audio Access app or subscribe to GASP through Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, and RSS feeds. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases, like us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter or Instagram. Call 1-800-670-5220 or visit www.graphicaudio.net.